What's up, my friend? Welcome to the Finding Direction podcast. My name is Stu Massengill, and I'm here every single week to bring you a passionate guest or message dedicated to helping you find your purpose so that you can live a life full of passion, fulfillment, and happiness. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for hanging out with me, and let's dive in. Welcome back, my friend, to another episode here on Finding Direction. I am so pumped to share this week's episode with you as I sit down with my new friend, Tom Fishman. And to give you a little of Tom Fishman's background, he's the CEO of a company called Start With Us, where they are bridging the gap to bring people together. And on top of that, he previously was working at MTV. That's where he got a big start in his career. He has done stuff with Facebook and a few other companies you've heard of. And what's interesting is Tom's background actually comes from being a physicist. So Tom's approach to life and his outlook has been, you know, built in a pretty interesting way, being a physicist first. And so a few things we talk about on this week's episode is the black belt move when you're making some sort of a professional transition, whether it's for a business or career. But there's one, we called it the black belt move, that Tom talks about that is just wickedly powerful if you can start to apply it to your life. We get to that in the beginning of the episode. And then what we also talk about is the three C's that really is the foundation of what Tom does at Start With Us that can allow you to really elevate your life. And he talks about how you can do it and how they do it with their company. But I also want you to take a moment when we get to the three C's and ask yourself how you can do that in your life right now, how you can implement those three C's into your life today towards yourself. And then the last thing that we talk about, amongst different things, is really one powerful question that when you ask it to yourself, can literally change the course of your life in the most beautiful way. It's something we get to in the last few minutes of this episode. So stick around for that. But this question, if you allow yourself to sit in it and dig in it, I promise you is going to unpack some wickedly, wickedly powerful things in your life. So get excited for this episode. If you haven't yet, make sure to hit that subscribe button so you can hang out with us every single week as we bring you two episodes a week, helping you get clear on your purpose and live in that every single day. And if you're enjoying it, from my heart to yours, I would be so, so, so grateful if you would leave us a quick rating, a review. Let us know, you know, what you like, what you want more of, so that we can continue to make this show better for you every single week. All right. Without that, let's dive right into this week's episode. I am so pumped for you. Here we go. Tom Fishman, welcome to the show, man. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me, Stu. I'm really pumped to be here. How you doing?
Absolutely. Me too. I'm doing wonderful. And even as we just kicked off, if you know, you listen to audio, people can't see your sweater, but I was complimenting your sweater, your energy, man. It's just, you have a very nice aura about you. So I'm pumped to dive in today. And thank as you. We kick this thing off, I would love it if you could give our listener sort of a like way, way, way back look on just what was life like for little Tom as you were growing up.
Yeah. Happy to do it. So I grew up in Queens, New York, which, you know, is imprinted on my heart in many ways. I grew up in a single parent household. I grew up with my brother and my dad. So it's sort of uncommon for the kids to go with their dad back then. Perhaps it still is, but it was definitely more uncommon then. So we had a little bit of a frat house going with the three boys. I won't say it was the most, you know, it didn't benefit from a lot of the traditionally sort of maternal or feminine things that maybe mom brings, but we made do. And I was you know, a diminutive kid on the schoolyard in the schoolyards in Queens, which is definitely a training. It's a life training. You learn how to sort of talk a good game in those days, because you have to get along with a lot of different kinds of people, economically, demographically. Queens, a great melting pot, one of the most diverse places in the world. And also you're trying not to get your ass kicked in the schoolyard every day, so you have to talk a good game as well. So I think that you know, it was a good place to be forged in the hot fires of Queens. And that sort of being at the intersection of lots of different types of people kind of, you know, followed me through my life. You know, I was a kid with a grew up, my dad's side of my family was Jewish. My mom's side, was Christian. So it was a little bit of that intersection. Of course, a lot of immigrant families in Queens where we grew up. My best friends were from first generation immigrant families from China and from Korea. I went to a Catholic high school, St. Francis Prep, go Terriers. As a sort of Jewish kid in a Catholic high school, which was really neat and really, really, really instructive. And I basically just grew up a kind of curious kid. My young life was touched by some challenges in my parents split up because my mom and her side of my family struggled with addiction for a long time, so it was that was close to me too and imprinted a lot of I think my view on the world as a kid. I'm just diving right in here. I feel very comfortable with you too. I'm giving you all the juice.
Thank you. And I'm curious too, and it's super interesting to hear. Obviously I know what you do today and our listeners from the intro know what you do today, but it's interesting to hear, like you said, being in Queens, being around all these different people. I'm curious, when you grew up, were you someone that kind of always like brought people together? Like, was that part of who you were as a kid? Just curious.
Yeah, I think that that's probably a good way maybe to summarize the way a lot of what I just talked about, both, challenges on my mom's side of the family and kind of being in the middle of lots of different kinds of people.
Right.
Being a person who brought people together is a big part of kind of my emotional source code, what my friend Doug Barron calls the emotional source code. And there are ways in which that is probably, the origin story, of maybe what became a superpower for me, but also, when you're a kid is a lot of responsibility and creates a lot of pressure on you. So I think it probably plays out in a lot of different ways, throughout my life and who I am is being the person who brings people together, who tries to create consensus, who tries to create, opportunities for collaboration. Yeah. And it's a big part of who I am.
Yeah. I think it's always so interesting how you can look back, and obviously it's easier to look back sometimes than it is forward. But if you look back and like what you're doing in your life or what you're passionate about or what fills you up or, what kind of just like gets your blood moving and gets you excited, so many times it blows back to like experiences or little things that happened to us as a kid that kind of formed us into who we are. And if we can, follow that, it can allow us to have a more enriching life. And so it's cool to just see the dots connected. But I'm curious, like, as you grew up and, I'm sure when you're a kid, you're probably not thinking like, oh, I'm bringing all these people together. This is what I'm going to do for my life. And like, you just don't have those kind of thoughts as you grow up. And so I'm curious, when we would tap into your mind of, little Tom Fishman, you're growing up and like, did you have an idea of what you wanted to do when you grew up? Did you have an idea of like, these are some of my dreams or these are some of, what I think would be cool. I want to be a fireman or like, Like, did you have any of those things as you grew up?
I didn't in any meaningful way, but when people would ask me that question, I would, maybe in a way that a lot of kids do, or maybe in a way that a certain type of kid does, I think a lot of the self-consciousness that I felt as a kid from a, kind of a quote unquote broken home and living with my dad and feeling like there was something maybe a little bit off kilter about my family and the way that my, I wouldn't have articulated it this way at that time, but looking back on it, I was always kind of self-conscious that my family appeared to be messed up. And that drove something in me, which is, I'm going to achieve in such a way that my family situation will be unassailable and beyond critique. So a lot of my early drive to, and believe me, I was any teacher I had to tell you, I was not the most motivated student or the best student, but I would, whatever energy I did have to achieve scholastically came from the sense of like, this is my shield. And so when people would ask me what I wanted to do, I would look for answers that were kind of impressive. And I'd say, I want to be a doctor. I want to be a professor. And it didn't really come from the inside at that point. And in a lot of ways, it took me a long time to reconnect with the things that got my blood moving because, I had the good fortune I mentioned I went to the high school that I went to was a really transformative experience to me because the care that a lot of teachers took in me to kind of realize who I am and what was interesting to me and about me, was a big step. And then Yeah, I went to I was a University of Chicago kid, so that had its own, was kind of its own academic gauntlet. So I was I had a very meandering kind of a trajectory through studying physics. Yes, because I found it interesting, but also it made me feel good to tell people I did it because it sounds hard. And I think that that thing as a kid of like wanting to say you do something that's impressive, you know, it didn't quite go away. And if I'm honest, maybe it still hasn't a little bit. I think that's the thing that drives a lot of us. But in particular for me at the time, I wanted it to sound good. And as I've maybe gotten a little older and further along in my career, I've been able to reconnect with the things about me that get me going. And just as you said, it is bringing people together. It really is trying to find ways in which people can realize their own potential through sitting with other people and not in a kumbaya way, in the ways that are hard, in the ways that are hopefully strengthening because they're uncomfortable.
Yeah. I love that. That is, and I, even doing my research on you, when I heard the, you know, what you've done with physics, I thought the same thing. I was like, damn, like I took a physics class once and it was difficult to say the least, and I did not get an A in it. Yeah. So I definitely thought that same thing, but I'm curious, like if you could go back to, let's say this, you know, younger part of yourself that was like, one, you got so many beautiful gifts from it, right? There was that sense of like, I need to do something big with my life. I need to like prove myself in a sense. And it's a huge part of probably what got you today. So there were some beautiful gifts in it.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you could also go back and like allow yourself to keep that sort of like drive that you got from that, but also, I don't know, maybe allow yourself to like enjoy the journey a little bit more along the process. Like, is there anything you'd go back to that younger part of yourself and give yourself as like advice as you would sort of take these next steps through your life?
Yeah, that's such a good question. You know, I'm sure there are, there's a part of me now that, you know, maybe on my better days feels a little more comfortable in my own skin. So I'm very grateful in a lot of ways for the path that got me here. But I think that, you know, a really deep concern for your own perception feels, you know, for how others perceive you. That feels like almost a universal human experience, is that, you know, you come up, especially through your adolescent years, your high school years, of like, how does everybody see me? And am I cool? Am I interesting? Am I smart? Even if you didn't have my particular flavor of that, if that's the thing that everybody has. Mine was kind of, you know, hyperactive, maybe because of my upbringing and my own self-consciousness about that. But I think that I would have encouraged myself to stay curious. I think that that's a thing that when I've been able to lean into my own curiosity, and a lot of times that's come at the expense of maybe more traditional paths, that's when I've really found the jet streams in my life to make advancements. I think either for myself as an individual, maybe in my personal life and, you know, my relationships, you know, my friends, with my wife, times in which like the path in front of you, you know, feels obvious, but you feel reckless enough to kind of step out of it. Even if it I restarted my career a bunch of different times. Like I was in physics through grad school and then took a hard left turn when I realized, okay, well, becoming a physics professor, as I got to know it a little bit better, is not what I want to do. I like learning about this, but now that to do the work, it's like, is not necessarily what I want to do. Or maybe any of the, you know, you could go into finance and become a quant, or there's a lot of ways that, you know, people with that background. And I was like, none of that. So I took a really hard left turn in my early 20s and got into post-production and early digital video at a time when kind of YouTube was proliferating very, very early. And that was, I remember, like, you know, my parents at the time, my family, even my, you know, she was not my wife then, my girlfriend, but like at the time her family was like, are you sure you want to do this? Because you are a credentialed scientist at this point. You want to like take a left turn into digital video? And it's
and
the
you
kind
were
of thing
out where, of you were out of school at this point, right? So you went through college, you got the degree, you were like, you had the physics degree.
Yeah,
like,
I went to grad school in physics and got my got a master's.
Okay,
and
so you were very invested.
I was
financially
invested,
time-wise, all of it.
That's right. But so here's the thing: in physics, most of the hard sciences, usually you don't, you know, you often don't leave with a master's. You're part of a PhD program.
Okay.
Leaving after I had done my coursework and passed my qualifying exams was the hard left turn. And everybody's like, what are you nuts? And I was nuts. That was a crazy thing to do. But it's the kind of thing that in retrospect, you can talk about it like, oh, so fearless, like what a great move. It was just naivete. And I think a sense of following my nose and kind of taking the next right step, the thing that was so interesting to me was not only the creative aspect of emergent kind of social and community driven media, but that community aspect. So again, bringing people together, because I was the guy, I was the assistant editor when I took that left turn and then got into post-production. That was my first foray into media, as I was an assistant video editor working overnight because the edit phase were so expensive. They didn't want me to, you know, take up space during a day when a proper editor could cut a TV show. So I would be there overnight doing all, you know, the early entry level kind of grunt work that, you know, you crack in and do. And, you know, I would kind of be looking around on like the very proto social media websites. Maybe even Reddit was around, but Dig and like some of these other sites, and you know, you put your videos on there and people would criticize them or like them or whatever. But I was like, this is so that sort of early community in digital media was really interesting to me. And then I took another hard turn from post-production into actually getting into early digital and social media. I went to work at Condé Nast. So now I've restarted my career twice. I got a master's in physics and started in post-production. Then I was getting, you know, I was a full-time editor and then started again in digital media. And at that point, I'm 27 years old. I have an entry-level job at Condé Nast and digital media. My job, basically, as it should have been, it's an entry-level job, which nobody should feel like they're above. But at 27, it scared me a little bit to it. Like, it was like, basically, you know, kind of managing a spreadsheet of like full of assets and not, and all my friends were like, I just became a managing director at an investment bank. And I'm like, oh my God, what have I done? Like, I have followed my nose and done the next right thing into career oblivion. And now, but I, you know, I kept at it and cracked into MTV as they were looking to hire, you know, their first full-time social media manager. And I got that job, and a little bit from kind of the rest was history for me as I, you know, spent most of my career in digital social media. And now I've taken that into the nonprofit space where I am now.
Yeah. So cool. And such a, like, I would say like a power as well in allowing yourself the gift to not feel like you need to get stuck in one thing. Like, I think it's such an interesting outlook sometimes where, you know, like you said, you can be in it and you look back on it, it's like, oh, what a noble move. But when you go back into it, it's much easier said than done. But I think one thing that's so interesting is like, if we look at our life at a grand scale, right? Let's say we're all going to live 80 years, hopefully. It's like, you look at those things and when you look at it in a grand scale, it's like, okay, well, I spent 4 out of 80 years doing this one thing, or, you know, 8 years getting the degree out of 80 years. It's like, yeah, it's a lot of time, but if you spent another, you know, 50 years doing it, then it's really a lot of time. So I think if we look at it a grand scale, these pivots that we make that sometimes seem abnormal can feel a little like we can feel a little bit more empowered to switch things when we know like you have so much more of your life left.
100%. So that is the zoomed out, almost cosmic perspective on you only get so many years on our, you know, wet blue ball called Earth. And you, like, who cares if you do all these things, like go follow your dream. And I want to provide, because I think that's really good for your listeners to think about, is like, think in the grand scheme of your life. And I do want to say, like, at the time, it's not like, you know, I wasn't sitting on a bunch of money where all these changes were like, you know, I come from a working class family. So it was, there was not really a net. So from the zoomed out perspective of these things in the grand scheme aren't that big, I want to offer the opposite perspective, which hopefully is also empowering, which is in that 4 years or you know, thereabouts, making all those changes, going from a physics sort of career that I did love it. It wasn't all for, you know, it made me sound good. I truly did and still do love physics. But going from, like, when I would tell people what I did, they thought it was impressive and that made me feel good. And I left it. And then I was in post production and then I left it. And then I was a 27-year-old coordinator in a huge media company thinking I had, like, you know, derailed my, I experienced like unbelievable terror and fear and probably depression at that time, because that's the zoomed in version, is you're in it. You're in that 4 years. And when you're living 4 years, that does not feel fast, and you can't take the cosmic view, and you're thinking day in, day out, man, like, did I do the wrong thing? Or, you know, is my chance gone? Is my timeline now messed up? Like, I went from feeling really proud to all of a sudden feeling, you know, very self-conscious again.
Totally.
And I would just say to your listeners that if you're in that, or you're not making a move because you fear that, which is very understandable, that also is normal, and those feelings are real. But the reality is, I think that if you are the type who can't do day in, day out a thing that is, and you know, is not at least somewhat aligned to an interest or a passion or even tolerable, I would encourage to, you know, look, if you got to put food on the table, there are things that, depending on where you are in your life, can disrupt that. But take both the cosmic view that, and the wide scale view that things are possible and it's not, but also know that if you're in the midst of that existential terror, that that's okay. And that you can and will come out of it. And it just takes perseverance and put one foot in front of the other, keep doing the next right thing. Love Don't that. Be above, you know, doing entry level things and making lateral or even backward moves to realign your life with the things that move you. It sounds good in retrospect. It will scare you and it will freak you out at the time. And that is okay. Yeah. That's a part of the process. Keep putting one foot in front of the other. That's my advice. And I wish somebody had told me that at that period. That would have been great.
Yeah. And I love the analogy of one foot in front of the other, right? It's like, you may be scared. You may have the terror. But if you just focus on like one step today, one step tomorrow, it can kind of be that those little steps that all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, wow, the skies are clear. Mm-hmm. Right. That stuff's gone.
That's right. I think another thing that, you know, the blessing of a few more years under my belt has given me is that perspective of, you know, really, really focusing on the things that you control as a way to affect broader scale change. That's a big element of some of the work I'm doing now. It starts with us, but just the personal sense that, you know, it's a way to, a thing I love about physics is that, and a thing I love about product management in tech, thing they have in common, is that you are always trying to simplify complex problems. And a way in your life to simplify complex problems, like you do that in physics, of course, you take, you know, the universe and you boil it down to a solar system and you boil that down to, you know, a series of points and an equation, and you realize how much you can learn. In product management, you say, I want to solve the goal of, you know, making dating easier and better and faster. And maybe you invent Tinder or something. I think that, you know, you're trying to take big problems and boil them down. Totally. In your life, focusing on the things that you control, focusing on doing the next right thing, you do want to, of course, have foresight. You want to look out, and when it all feels too complex, like what is in your control? And it typically looks like what you do with your time, how you prioritize the things in your life. And those things aren't easy, but they're at least addressable things that are right in front of you that you can imagine writing down on a piece of paper. Okay, do I need to realign priorities? How am I spending my time? How do I get from point A to point B? If I want to start a new career, is the way to do it financially? Is there a way to do it in my network? Realizing your potential has to do with grabbing the reins on the things that you control in your life. And on my best days when I can do that, I feel like I'm effective at it. And you know, like most people, not every day is my best day. And sometimes, you know, you lose sight of that. So I think I appreciate you bringing it up. That's a big one to, you know, put one foot in front of the other, but control the things that are, you know, that are right in front of you. Take control of the things that are immediately available to you.
Yeah. And I think a great point for our listener right now is to ask themselves, are you focusing on what you can control or can't control? Right. Yeah. 'Cause you can focus on what you can't control, and it is going to drive you crazy. It's going to make you want to smash your head against the wall. It's going to feel like you can never get out of this, right? If you're focused on what you can't control. But if you focus on what you can control, it at first, I think, can maybe be scary, because you're like, okay, like I'm in control and I'm not where I want to be. And like, did I mess up? And at first it can be not so fun, but then once you kind of get over that piece, you go, wait, but I am in control. And so if I don't like it, that means I can start to shift it, right? I'm in control of what my life looks like. That's right.
It's empowering. It elevates your own agency, but it is very hard because the complexity and the chaos of all of our lives, of the media ecosystems we're in, of the, you know, it's like the externalities of our lives. These things are things that we feel. It's not that they're not real. It just, it takes effort. to sort of sit down and focus and to simplify on, right, on the things that you do truly control. And maybe an interesting example of this, actually a wild example. So I mentioned before, right, I have been at media at the intersection of media, tech, culture for a long time, trying to use those skills now to accomplish the mission of the current organization I'm leading, which is called Starts With Us. Our mission, our mission is to empower Americans to overcome extreme cultural and political division by fostering freer expression, more independent thinking from kind of tribal loyalties, and ultimately more constructive and cooperative communication across lines of difference. So, you know, when you think about, okay, well, the mission is to basically depolarize, give the Americans the tools to depolarize the country, that feels like a lot. That feels incredibly complex. Yeah. When I tell people that, they say, you know, wow, that sounds impossible. And
good luck.
Surely, when you think about the totality of that challenge, it's too daunting. So lot of what, you know, it's right there baked into the title, Starts With Us, is, okay, if we think about each atomic unit of our national community, it's an individual. What do I control? It's me. It's how I show up in the world. It's the level of curiosity I have for the world and the information I consume and the other people. It's the compassion I have for other people, and in particular people who are different than me or live different lives than me or who have come to believe very, very different things than me. And it's the courage to actually collaborate and cooperate with those people to solve problems from, you know, the smallest level to the biggest societal level. So I mentioned curiosity, compassion, and courage. That to us, habituating what we affectionately call the three C's that starts with us, and focusing on the self. How do I do it? How do I control what I control? And that's basically our theory of change, which is that if enough of us do that, then that's how we break the enormous challenge down to an empowering, personal way that we can all do our part to turn the tide on that. So obviously still there's a lot of work to do, but it's one example of how just in, you know, from physics to product management to personal kind of potential realization to depolarizing America, breaking huge, enormous problems down into its atomic pieces and controlling the things that you control right in front of you is a systematic way to at least approach addressing really big challenges in your life and in, you know, society.
Yeah. And it's so interesting. Like, I love how our conversation has gone back to physics multiple times, because I think it's interesting that in life, like, everything we do is just stacking on, like, we're just stacking on skills. And sometimes it may not seem relevant. It may not seem, what does this have to do with the other thing? But eventually when you get into the next thing, you go, oh my God, because I knew this thing about physics and how, you know, atoms work, it totally makes sense in what I'm doing today. Like, there's so much cross-pollination that happens from the different things we're going through in our life, and they don't seem anything alike. But the beauty is when you go to that next thing where they don't seem alike, it almost becomes your superpower, because you look at things in such a different way, because nobody else is bringing physics to what you're doing, right? So it's like this thing that you're like, it wouldn't make sense here, but it makes so much sense. And it's almost like a superpower. And it's such a, you know, for anyone going through anything in their life, it's like those odd, strange changes that we think don't make any sense can sometimes be the superpower that we now have in the role that we're in. It's crazy.
100%. I love that. That insight fills my heart. There is no such thing as a non-transferable skill.
Yeah.
There's just not. And that's, of course, from your professional experience, from your personal experience. One of the ways, in fact, I believe I was able to go from kind of a physics-based, you know, track then into media, and in particular, getting that first job at MTV, my kind of a social media manager there, started around 2010, is that it was sort of weird to see physics on my resume. I think, you know, it helps to stand out from, you know, so when you make those hard left turns, it's like a little bit of like, oh, what's that person doing here? And a little bit of my pitch at the time, you know, the field was advanced enough to know that data and you know, an analysis were going to be important in every part of a digital, you know, from community management and growth to digital marketing to, you know, all kinds of optimization and what kind of content can I create? How do I multivariate test headlines? All these things that have become, you know, almost like, you know, just now foundational skills in the world of digital media. it was a little bit of like not being scared of the math and the analysis was a part of my pitch on the way in. It's like, I'm used to analyzing millions of data points. It happens to be likes and shares now instead of, you know, stars and black holes.
Yeah.
But, you know, in R or in SAS, you're still just crunching big numbers.
Yeah.
So no such thing as a non-transferable skill.
Yeah. And I love how you put it, like flipping it almost into a competitive advantage of like, this is what this is going to bring me. And if you can share that with someone else, like you said, it's one, it like turns their light bulb on a little bit. It's like, he wasn't just in marketing and went to marketing and went, and now he's here. It's like, it makes you stand out because people are like, what is that? And then if you can articulate how it's a strength, man, that's so cool.
I gave a college student that I am mentoring recently is in sort of data and analytics, and spent his last summer basically bootstrapping and self-producing a film, and is now kind of in that period of time where he is applying for internships for next summer.
Yeah.
And he was having a little bit of like a regret, like, man, should I have done a different thing last summer? I can't really point to some work that I did. And we had this exact conversation, which is, you want to go in now to talking about that experience as a way that you learned how to tell a story, as a way that you learned how to move hearts and minds, as a way that you learned how to approach really big challenges in a way that's creative and scrappy. And that notion of turning what seems like the unrelated skill into a competitive advantage, that is the black belt move. That is there's no non-transferable skill move.
For real.
I love that.
The black belt move. That's so real. So if we go back into your story, obviously you filled us in on Start With Us and what you do, but I would love to hear a little bit more as far as like, how did all of a sudden that come into your life? Because at Start With Us, you guys are so like mission driven, right? You have this big grand purpose that you're after. And I'm curious, how did that sort of come across your path?
Yeah. So, I was at a point just in my sort of professional life where I had spent a great portion of my career in and around kind of the creative audience development. This was mostly at MTV, where I spent the kind of lion's share of my early career and sort of grew up there, basically building out social media, audience development, digital publishing, new format, new revenue streams, like a lot at the horizontal kind of intersections of media and new revenue streams, and bringing this venerable, incredible brand into new spaces in ways that, you know, when we were doing a good job, are really authentic and we're monetizable and we're building community.
Right.
And, I was at Facebook for a little while after that for a couple of years working on Facebook Watch, wanting to be a part of the next big things in video and be at a product and tech led organization. So that was a big part of my boot camp there. And then was the GM of kind of a medium sized interactive video company called Echo for a couple of years after that. So I'd been at this intersection of media and tech for a long time and had this sense that, you know, I had picked up like Liam Neeson in What's That Been Taken. I had a unique set of skills, and I had been using them, in the for-profit sector and was just at a point, I think, in my personal life and in seeing, you know, a lot of what we all look out the window and see, whatever our politics or our beliefs are, the sense that kind of the fabric of our communities and our society is being rended by a lot of the forces of nature that are technology driven in many ways, that can be social media driven in many ways. And I was like, man, you know, and didn't sort of, I had this, this tug towards, you know, maybe there's something I can do in the impact space.
Yeah.
And kind of serendipitously intersected with Starts With Us as they were looking for a leader. Now, Starts With Us is founded and funded by a guy named Daniel Lubetsky, who founded and built Kind Snacks and Kind Bars, if you know them.
And
it's probably, you know, he's on Shark Tank sometimes. Some of the people know him from that. But Daniel's been doing bridge building work for the better part of three decades. So this has been a big part of his for-profit and nonprofit life, even predating Kind. So as he saw an opportunity to put, his network and brain power and resources into like, how do we solve this immense societal problem? He also is such a believer in the power of storytelling and you know, narrative building and sustained campaigning as a way to affect the culture at a broad scale, and was something differentiated or at least additive in the bridge building field, which is, you know, quite robust with really great organizations and incredibly smart people, is, hey, maybe there's room for another organization that is coming at this from kind of the air game angle in terms of creating sort of bigger picture. And that, you know, is what brought me here. I mean, I've spent, you know, now the better part of 15 years building scaled communities across many different platforms, using content and creative to do that, and thinking about how to do that with kind of a, you know, with the ruthless focus on value proposition and on radical customer focus, and you know, building products and products and experiences and creative to scale communities. So it felt like if there's an opportunity to put that experience to work to scale a community around the daily practice of curiosity, compassion, and courage as an antidote to the bad habits so many of us have picked up in an increasingly lonely and disintermediated and polarized society. I was like, this is the kind of swing I was born. Like, that's where I take your advice. And I think about, you know, life is 80 years, which feels, you know, which kind of feels really long and really short at the same time. It's like, if I'm taking a swing with what I know how to do, this is that swing. And, you know, got along great with Daniel, and we spent the last year building up this organization. And that's sort of how I landed here.
Love it. And one of the things I know, I'm a big pillar of you guys, you've spoken about it, is those three C's, right? So curiosity, compassion, courage. I'm curious, what would you say is just like one tip for our listener on how they could increase each of those? Like, how does someone increase their compassion? How does someone increase their curiosity? How does someone increase their courage? Like, what would be, I don't know, tip you have? Because I think really those three things, like, you obviously, it's the pillars of what you guys have, but if we can learn to increase those things, even by just like 1% a day, that can lead to a fulfilling, a happy, successful life and an enriching life.
Yeah. So one of the things that I would recommend that people can do right away, and I'm gonna zoom out from this in a second, but cool. Think about the news sources that you find to be objectionable or not aligned potentially with your political or cultural values. Now, there is a limit here. I'm not saying go seek out something fringy or something hateful. Yeah. That hopefully goes without saying, but let's say it. I think if you're liberal, perhaps go seek out three reputable and principled conservative news sources, even if they continuously are putting out headlines or framing that, you know, you truly don't disagree with, or vice versa. If you're conservative, perhaps do that with some more liberal or progressive outlets, and just follow them and introduce that into your media diet. And over time, getting signal and seeing framing from sources that you respect but disagree with, and doing the work to actually expose yourself to those things which are potentially causing discomfort.
Yeah.
One, they're unlikely to change your mind, right? And that's not the goal. It starts with us to change anybody's mind, or to meet in the middle, or to kumbaya. That's not what we're doing. The goal is to see people who have arrived at fundamentally different beliefs about the world than you, and to maintain their humanity, to maintain as an assumption their fundamental complexity. People who, you know, if we take a really, you know, you take the big, you know, sort of wedge issues in this country, things like abortion access, things like immigration, things like gun rights or gun control. The way that those things are framed in the media so frequently can be us versus them.
Totally.
But we are all us. That's one of our, you know, at the end, like, that's one of our foremost beliefs. If you start to introduce some of the coverage or some of the points of view, there's an inevitability to seeing the humanity of the other, to seeing at least the way in which they're thinking and the way in which they're arriving at their viewpoint, which, again, even if it doesn't change your mind, has the effect of slowing down the reactivity to say,
right,
well, this person in my feed, I have a family member who shared something about the Second Amendment on either end that I don't agree with. So So they're garbage and I don't like them and they must be voting for this person and I'm going to mute them and they're gone and I'm going to go back to my team and we're going to wave the flag of the correct opinion. That's not how problems are solved. It's not how we make progress. It's not how we become a little better off tomorrow than we were today by trying to solve the shared problems that we have, which are that, you know, if we take guns as an example, that we don't want what happened in Uvalde and so many other schools to continue to be an outsized risk in America. But we also, if we take as fundamental right the Second Amendment, we want people who are law abiding and who enjoy hunting or going to a range to have to wait 18 months to get, you know, to get access to a gun. I think there the opportunity to solve those problems, which are enormous and complex, let's come back to this principle, come back down to boiling down, well, if I hold somebody else who believes something really different than me, if I hold their humanity front and center, I'm much more likely to be able to sit with them and address a problem versus spout talking points at them. And introducing that media into your diet is a continual reminder that there is something uncomfortable out there for you that you don't believe, but that many others believe, and gets you comfort with discomfort. And there's a real sense that there's an exercise to this, right? When we think about getting fit, I go to the gym and I do 20 reps of, you know, however many, whatever the weight is, that's me being uncomfortable 20 times. And then I rest and then I'm stronger after that. We are not used to doing that in terms of our beliefs, in terms of our culture. We're not used to like getting a little discomfort, taking a rest, feeling strengthened by it, getting back into the gym. So if we then can, there's a line to be drawn where, okay, well, if I can fit with the media and I can fit with a little bit of the sort of, you know, with it's got the digital arm's length, but I can introduce it into my life. So I know where people are coming from. Then when I run into somebody at a Thanksgiving dinner or at a school board meeting or on an airplane or, in, you know, that I'm sort of used to being comfortable with discomfort. I'm familiar with some of the ways that the thinking happens, even if I disagree with them, then the conversation is a little different. Then I feel strengthened for that conversation, not reactive to it, not triggered by it, not bummed out by it, not immediately angry. It's like, okay, like I've seen how this evolved for the last, you know, many days or weeks or months. I see kind of where people who believe a similar thing to you are coming from. You can say like, maybe I think about it differently now having done that. That is a possibility. Or you can say, I still maintain my beliefs in a staunch way, but I've gotten a better sense of where you're coming from. Pass the gravy, you know, Uncle whoever, because like it's all of a sudden, it doesn't feel alien to you. It doesn't feel threatening to you.
Right.
And so anyway, that's one thing. We are in the business that starts with us of offering different kinds of very practical tips and exercises that people can do every day. So you can find that, you know, wherever we are, but that fundamentally is like, you know, through social, through our email newsletter, all these things. Right. That's what we're in the business of is, you know, you can practice the three C's every day. You don't need Starts With Us to do that. You can go out in your own life and do that. What we offer is a community of people who are committed to striving to do that and striving to increase the amount of people do it and giving those people the daily tools in a way that honestly is like, doesn't feel like homework. It doesn't feel boring. I think that's the biggest thing is like, and that's where the value prop comes from is, we're putting tools in people's hands that hopefully one are interesting and challenging and rewarding in the right ways that feel like it's worth their time. And that two feel like I gain an immediate value. It's not just, you know, saving democracy. I'm a better communicator when I practice the three C's. I'm a more effective problem solver. I'm a sharper negotiator because I can be compassionate for the other side and try to find the win-win. These are really practical skills that are empowering to people in their jobs, in their marriages, in our schools, in our family, at our churches. The three C's are about realizing your personal potential on the path to realizing the potential of our society.
Right. Yeah. It is interesting too, as I hear you say that, like I can feel our listener even having, like you said, that like emotional pull in them. That's like, go look at what, right? But it is interesting, you know, in a sense that you look at like, people that go to like a debate class or something like that. Like one of the common practices in a debate class is you study the other side's argument, right? And you learn about the other side. You understand why do they have those beliefs? And then therefore, when you come to the debate, it allows you to kind of know what's going on in that person, have more maybe compassion, we could say, towards what's going on. And I like the part you said where, you know, it's not do it to change your belief. It's not do it to move you in another direction. It's just, like you said, kind of going to the gym, like get a rep in, say, okay, maybe this is what's going on. Maybe this is why they have these beliefs. And then, you know, if you're at, you know, let's say Thanksgiving's coming up, right? You're at Thanksgiving dinner, maybe it allows you to, you know, enjoy being with your family a little bit more. So it is a very interesting thing. And I think it's good to, you know, just understand what, like, why do other people have these strong beliefs? And what's popped into my head is it's like, you know, if you had two people, you know, screaming and shouting at each other, no problem's really going to get solved. Like, you do have to bring that compassion. You have to bring that sort of, like, you have to bring a different energy if you really want to solve a problem. It doesn't come when we, you know, smack and punch each other around. So it's a very interesting way to look at that, and kind of perfect timing. I'm curious if people want to get more, you know, of start with us and you. And I mean, if people are hanging out here and they're going, man, you know, Tom's a pretty cool guy. Where's a place they can find you, start with us, and basically just stay more plugged into your world and what you guys are doing and what you're doing?
Yeah. So, you know, we have a weekly newsletter that, you know, dives a little deeper on a lot of these topics that's very timely relative to news, continues to provide these kinds of tips. So if you're interested in that, you can go to startswith.us/join. And you can sign up for our newsletter there. You can check out the website, or you can find us on any of your favorite social media platforms. Yeah. You know, we're on Instagram and TikTok and all of them. And you get, you know, a lot of our, you know, everything from really practical tips and tricks to practice the three C's every day to storytelling around, like, people who are in their communities and their lives. We have these really interesting stories around. There's one released recently where there's a wolf advocate and a cattle rancher in Colorado who are obviously at ends, as like the, you know, and they're trying to figure out how to work together to solve goals. There's a story that these kind of mini documentaries, one where a woman is working and connected very closely with a former drug dealer who actually very sad, like, sold her son the fatal dose. And she has connected with this person across that incredible boundary and across that tragedy to try to find a path forward to a radical show of forgiveness, of compassion, and of what happens. Now, that, of course, is is a very very deep and sort of moving example. Hopefully what most people are facing in their day to day isn't quite that grave. But when we elevate those stories that you don't see, that are not algorithmically incentivized, that are not drawing people into huge ratings on cable news, we want to tell those untold stories of radical compassion and radical courage, radical cooperation, radical curiosity. Because when we see that, we are reminded of, well, if they're possible of, you know, if these folks are capable of that, what can I do in my day to day? Surely I can do some reps and get a little stronger every day. And we believe that that's a skill and a habit that a lot of us have lost. Myself and our team, you know, as much as anybody, we are all of this community. You know, we don't, you know, claim any secret knowledge. We're just focused on it all the time and trying to spread the word. So starts with us, startswith.us/join, or go find us on Instagram. We'd love to, love to have your community check us out.
Heck yeah. Very cool. And so my last question for you, this question we ask every guest, because we want to help people find direction, but we believe in doing it through action, is what would you say is one thing someone listening to this can do in the next 24 to 48 hours to start finding direction in their life?
That's such a good question. I think that, you know, one of the questions that I think we have arrived at again and again over the course of the conversation is, what would you do if you weren't afraid? What would you do if there weren't, you know, some of the immediate consequences financially, if you had all of the support and opportunity in sort of the world to make, what's your life's hard left turn that you think might like make that a major sort of realignment? Don't worry about the finances of it all. Don't worry about the practicalities of it all. Those things can and will come into play. You have to at least allow yourself the opportunity to dream big for yourself. You owe it to yourself. Because, like you said, Stu, you only got 80 years. What is the hard left turn? And you don't have to take the whole thing at once. When you write it down, then you start to get to, okay, well, how can I inch a little bit closer to that? What could I do? Is it an online course? Is it something in my network? But I think that having the courage to write it down, what would be fearless, hard left turn that if I could take it today and have the guts to write it down, I might be able to move an inch towards it tomorrow. I would encourage your listeners to do that, to allow yourself 10 minutes, you know, don't overthink it. What's your hard left turn? And then see, how do you inch towards it? You'd be surprised how quickly you get there when you have the guts to write it down.
Yeah, that is, I love that. I've never had someone share that, but I think for anyone that really like takes, like you said, 10 minutes, write it down, journal on it, sit with it, go take a walk and think about it. It's like, this can be one of those episodes you come back to and you go, damn, like that one piece Tom gave me at the end, literally, I took the left turn, changed the course of my life, led to more fulfillment, more passion, more happiness. So I really do hope our listener takes that and really sits with that. So Tom, I want to say thank you again for being here. It's been beyond a joy to kind of dive through your story and such a cool journey that you've had. So thank you for being here. Thank you for being super open and just raw about everything you've been through. Massively appreciate having you on the show.
Yeah, likewise, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Congratulations, my friend, on crushing it through another episode here on Finding Direction. I want you to make sure you give yourself a pat on the back. Give yourself a round of applause because you are one of the few who is not willing to settle for less than a life that lights up your soul. And that is absolutely something worth celebrating. And yes, I literally mean pat yourself on the back. Actually give yourself a round of applause. It will literally release dopamine in your brain so you continue to progress on this path of becoming the best version of yourself. I want to say thank you as always for joining me on this week's episode. I really hope you got some value from that conversation with Tom. He is so much wisdom and so wise from the journey that he's been through. So I hope you take maybe just one thing from that episode and ask yourself, how can you start applying it? Maybe it's asking the question at the end. Maybe it's diving into something else, but make sure absolutely that you take some action after listening to this one. Other than that, that's all we have. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. If you want to get more, don't feel like you need to go anywhere. I have another episode coming up right after this. And other than that, I will talk to you soon. Take care, my friend.